Hello and welcome to the Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place on your internet dial where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale, supplying you with the ingredients and services you need to make your cosmetics business a success. Private label services and the world's largest supply of naturally and organically derived cosmetic spaces in the world. Visit EssentialWholesale.com for more information. Well, last week, Representatives Markey of Massachusetts, Schakowsky of Illinois, and Baldwin of Wisconsin introduced H.R. 5786, the Cosmetics Act, the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010. As the founder and president of the Indie Beauty Network and the host of this show, my 800-plus members across the nation are affected by this legislation, so today I'm doing something I've never done in the five-year history of this show. I'm changing the format indefinitely to provide a forum for you to learn, share, and ask questions about this new legislation and how it affects our nation's small business owners. I hope you've had a chance to go to opposesca.com and see exactly how you can join the chat. I hope you're listening. If you'd like to click on the tweet chat link or the tweet grid link in that post, feel free to do that so you can actually join us in the chat. I'd like to introduce my guest for today. Anne Marie Fayola of Brambleberry is one of my guests. She runs her company out of Bellingham, Washington. Kayla Fioravanti of Essential Wholesale owns and manages with her husband, Dennis, Essential Wholesale in Portland, Oregon. Kristen Fraser-Cott of the Great Seed Company in Santa Barbara is also joining us today. And Lila Barker of Bella Luce in Irmo, which is outside Columbia, South Carolina, is also here. And later in the show, we will also have Marla Bosworth in Massachusetts from the Back Porch Soap Company. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm so excited that you're all here, and we've got some things to delve into here. We're talking about the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010. So Anne Marie Fayola at Brambleberry, I'd like to start with you. I know you've been involved in the cosmetics industry for many years, and in particular, as this legislation has sort of percolated up, you've been involved in that. Can you take a few minutes to just trace quickly how we got to this point?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on as a guest. Back in 2008, the FDA Globalization Act was first introduced, presumably to help give some more transparency to our current cosmetic laws as they exist, even though the cosmetics industry is one of the most safe industries in, well, quite frankly, in the world. The FDA Globalization Act was part of revamping food, drugs, and cosmetics and medical devices. At the time, that particular act wanted everyone to register formulations with the FDA, report all potential adverse reactions, so something that you thought might happen if someone used your products that could be negative, and had up to $12,000 in fees for small businesses. You, me, Bella Luce, and Jay Blossom and Kayla all went back to Washington, D.C. and met with representatives, had a massive letter writing campaign, and in response in part to that, the FDA Globalization Act of 2008 morphed into FDA Globalization Act of 2009. And in the 2009 Act, we still had to have everyone register. There would have been inspections on different facilities, but there would be no fees to register your business or submit your ingredients decks, meaning this act was still requiring you to put in your list of ingredients that you put in your products. And now that act seems to have gone by the wayside, but a brand new Safe Cosmetics Act has been put up for draft legislation. And it's got a fantastic name. Who doesn't love the idea of safe cosmetics? But this particular one is a little bit different in that it requires you to list detectable trace elements on the labels. And we can get into more of that later. But one of the new things in the legislation is also that it requires to have safety statements in addition to ingredients listings for everything. So it's a little more draconian in terms of the labeling requirements and the paperwork for small business.
Thank you for that summary. It's interesting to know that this has been around for a little bit of time and that it has changed dramatically from some of the prior drafts.
Yes, it has. It's been morphing and changing slowly.
Kayla Fioravanti from Essential Wholesale, you know, you've obviously, as Anne-Marie just mentioned, been involved as well. So I have a question just as the host of the show. And I know I'm IBM's president, but I'm also curious as a person to know why this legislation. Are cosmetics safe in this country?
Cosmetics are completely safe. And matter of fact, our safety record is long. We have absolutely no major injuries, no deaths, no nothing that can actually be attributed to cosmetics. The Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and the Environmental Working Group have devised basically a group of ingredients that they believe, without any scientific facts, are related to cancer, because they're taking studies about when they're being injected into a rat at, you know, 100% or and comparing that as if the topical application of the same ingredient at a low percentage would cause the same effect. And that's basically where this is coming from, is basically misuse of science to try and say that now if you put it on topically, it's causing the same effect.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second, too, because, of course, in March of this year, just a few months ago, many people on this show right now and so many other of our listeners today mobilized to defeat a cosmetics law that would have passed in Colorado, which was also based on some of this kind of questionable science. Are there any parallels here?
This almost looks like the Colorado Act, but stricter, and with a few things removed that they lost on the first time. So it very much looks related, almost like Colorado was a test drive, and then this is the here's what we've refined it down to, or even it's almost encompassed even more, because when you read through what ingredients would be included, there's pretty much nothing that is excluded.
No, and Kayla, weren't there also scientists, because I listened to the entire 8 or 9 hour testimony from the Colorado proceedings. There were a number of scientists there, were there not, who discussed that the science wasn't there to support this kind of requirements. Is that right?
There definitely were, both on our side and their side, actually. People that testified on our side talked about the fact that you can't correlate something being injected or inhaled at 100% to a topical application. And even when their scientists were questioned, they basically kind of came around to almost supporting our position. And then when I believe it was Susan Roll from the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics had up and testified and was asked, you know, where's the science? She said, we don't have the science. We wish we did, but we believe that this is causing cancer. And so out of that belief, they believe that we should legislate.
So is it fair to say that what you just described is a piece of overreaching or very comprehensive, shall we say, legislation that is based on science that's not proven the need for it at all?
Correct. There is absolutely no need. There's no scientific studies at all mm-hmm. to support this act. There's also no, you know, case studies that mm-hmm. support this act. There's nobody being harmed with cosmetics. And there's no studies that show, you know, use of this lotion or this ingredient is causing anything, and no case study or scientific, you know, controlled study.
Well, thank you for sharing that. We also have on our show today Kristen Fraser Cott. She's in California, and she's the owner of the Grape Seed Country Company. And Kristen, your business would be affected by this legislation, right?
Most definitely. Anyone's business, if they're manufacturing cosmetics and personal care products.
Tell us a little bit about how you started. And, you know, you're a small cosmetics company. You're opening a retail store. You're going to be hiring employees. What is happening here?
Well, right now we're in our sixth year of business, but this is just my second year as a full-time employee of the Grape Seed Company. I started my business in my own kitchen. I actually started experimenting making my own skincare products when I lived on a boat and was traveling for 2 years, and we weren't able to get to the store to make things. So I started studying aromatherapy and natural products and bought some simple ingredients and made my own things while I was traveling. When I came back to Santa Barbara and settled there, I decided to start a skincare company. and did so by selling at a local market, and did this while I was a full-time teacher, and then was able to go part-time as a teacher, and now I'm full-time employed by the Grape Seed Company. I have two part-time employees working with me right now, and we're looking to hire more. It's very scary looking at this draft legislation and thinking about how it could affect me. And anyone like me that wants to start their own business, it could literally squash an entrepreneur's dream.
Well, and we certainly don't want to be doing that at this time in our history or really any other time. We're involved in some very difficult economic times. So let's talk specifics here, Kristen. There are several provisions, and we won't be able to get into every single one of them because of time constraints on the show, but let's just go ahead and start with something that Kayla mentioned, and that was, you know, ingredient testing and the science. Tell me, you know, what is required of you by this new legislation that, you know, just is really not necessary to protect your customers?
Well, basically, they're looking to have us register every single formula that we make in their system, and also register every single ingredient in that formula and possible toxins that might be associated with the ingredient. The issue with this becomes there's trace toxins in everything around us. There's trace toxins in our air, our water, our soil, even organic products, organic fruits, organic vegetables are grown in soil that has trace toxins. The water we drink has trace toxins in it. So the actual logistics of sitting down to register something in a system that it's kind of mind-boggling to think of. When you're looking at the trace toxins, if we are required to register those for each and every single product, my company makes over 50 different products. I already said I'm the only full-time employee. There's just no possible way we would be able to do that. And right now at the stage I'm in, no possible way I could hire someone that could do that because I can't afford to.
So let me make sure I understand what you just said. You said that, of course, now you have to list your ingredients on a label, right? You've got it, you know, lavender oil, you know, water, shea butter, whatever. You have to put that on the label, right?
Most definitely. And we actually list everything on our website as well, just like you would okay. see on the label.
Okay, so you're saying that aside from that or in addition to that, you would also have to list the elements contained in those ingredients as well as the ingredients themselves?
Exactly.
So what does that mean for, like, let's just take essential oil? I mean, that's a natural ingredient, right? It's totally naturally occurring. How many ingredients are in lavender essential oil that you would also have to add just for that one ingredient to a bottle of your body oil, say?
It's going to depend on the ingredient, but like I said earlier, there's trace amounts of toxins in everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're required to do that, we actually have to list the trace amount of toxins that might be in water and also possibly be responsible for testing each and every ingredient for those trace amounts of toxins. And as a small business, there is absolutely no possible way that we can hire chemists to do that or, you know, to fund that, as well as inputting it into the possible system that could be put in place by this.
So, I mean, we can't avoid, I mean, you know, there's seems to me, fast foods that are worse for us than the oil that you put in your products, and people can still sell those without having to do a billion tests on them.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
It's very interesting that cosmetics are being targeted in this way because, as both Anne-Marie and Kayla just pointed out, we have a proven track record of, you know, no deaths, no serious reactions, and for some reason cosmetics are being targeted like this instead of other things, which doesn't make much sense to me personally. But
Lila Barker of Bella Luce in Columbia, South Carolina, you'd be affected by this as well, and you have numbers of employees in your offices manufacturing your products safely for years, right?
Absolutely. Bella Luce will celebrate its 7th birthday next month. And when we started at my kitchen table as a single mom with two kids. And literally, we needed the money to eat and started incredibly small, completely self-financed, and have gradually built ourselves up over the years. I now employ about a dozen people in various capacities. We have office workers, customer support representatives, people that work in manufacturing and in shipping, not to mention support services for us. There's, you know, web design, graphic design, branders, branding experts, that kind of thing. So we have a lot of people that depend on this particular company to survive. And in this economy, I'm a little bit startled by the ramifications and implications of this bill, even though we're not necessarily a baby in this industry anymore. We are still very much a small business, and quite frankly, the implications for us would be devastating.
Well, tell me quickly, if this law, you've read through it, I know that. If this law had been in effect 7 years ago when you were a single mom with two children looking to start a business so you could support yourself, would you have been able to start your business?
Absolutely not. I think reading through legislation like this would have stopped me dead in my tracks, and I would have either found something else to do or had to enter the traditional workforce and be at the whim of, you know, my employer and the economy and all the other factors that play into that. But it certainly would have been a complete barrier to entry for me.
Thank you for sharing that. We're going to take our first break and come back and talk with my amazing guests, small cosmetics manufacturers from across the country, about the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010. We'll be right back. Don't touch that mouse.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Indie Business Podcast. We're talking with several of my guests today about the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010. We have a lot more ground to cover. If you have any questions and you're in Tweet Chat or our Tweet Grid link, please feel free to tweet them there and we'll see if we can answer them. Of course, you can go to opposesca.com and leave any of your questions in the comments there. And we've got a new petition we want to tell you about as well. So don't disconnect until you get to the end of the show, because we want to share some action things, some specific things that you can do to make sure that your congressional representatives in your state know how you feel and how small businesses like yours and your customers will be impacted by this. Kayla, I want to go back to something we talked about really quickly in the first part of the show about the safety of cosmetics. Now, the FDA does regulate cosmetics, and it's not legal to make an unsafe cosmetic and sell it. Is that true right now, even without this law?
That is true. It is currently illegal to manufacture any cosmetic that is dangerous. You know, we're required to test them to make sure they're safe, make sure their microbial count is safe, and the FDA does seize products and pull them off the market currently.
Great. Okay. So it seems to me then that, I mean, and I've read through the legislation as well, and, you know, I've used lots of products that are manufactured by people. I get them at my farmer's markets. I buy them online. I've used the products of people on this show before as well, and I know people who have. So did anyone ever heard of a problem with the products that small companies make, which, as I understand it from my experience, contain a very high proportion of the natural ingredients that consumers want in their products? Kayla?
I have never heard of any small company getting in trouble for putting out an unsafe cosmetic. I don't know if anybody else has, but and I follow the FDA daily and have yet to ever see a single recall of a dangerous small business cosmetic.
I hadn't either. Anne Marie, we talked a little bit about testing. and we just said that, you know, it's not legal to sell a cosmetic that could cause injury in this country. So this bill takes it a little bit further. Can you talk from the perspective of testing finished products and testing ingredients and trace components? Why is all this necessary, do you think, or is it?
Well, I don't believe it's necessary. There is a very, very clear way to test all the ingredients that go into cosmetics right now. Safety substantiation of ingredients, either by manufacturers, so people like Bella Luce, or raw materials suppliers, like the large big guys that are supplying the raw materials, is already based on rigorous scientific safety processes. They include closely related substances, using computer modeling to predict toxicity, in vitro testing, and human safety testing, and of course, as we know, animal testing as well. Safety is already determined on a basis with proven risk assessment. There are many different components out there for safety testing: National Academy of Sciences, Society of Toxicology, Research Institute for Fragrance Materials, the Cosmetic Ingredient Review Board. All of those things look at hazard identification, dose response, exposure assessment, risk characterization, carcinogenity, skin irritation, all of these things. And those are already being done for all of the products that go into cosmetics. There's usage rates for everything that goes into cosmetics. And one thing that this law would do, if it's done as currently drafted, is that it would make you put detectable trace elements on the label. So water would now have water, arsenic, cadmium, copper, lead, nickel, silver, and zinc. And if you live in my town, you'd include caffeine, oral contraceptives, and antibiotics in your water, because our drinking water in my town has that. And also, interestingly enough, under this new law, ingredients that would be considered carcinogenic when ingested or eaten, even in detectable trace amounts, you would not be able to put in the product. So, for example, you'd be able to eat an apple, but not put them in skincare products, because apples contain cyanide and formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is like one of these big, scary things they toss out there. Do you want to be putting formaldehyde in your skin? Well, no. I'm so scared of that. But did you know we eat formaldehyde in apples, apricots, bananas, cabbages, carrots, cauliflower, grapes? I mean, the list goes on and on. So ultimately, what this is going to do is make your labels be a book long and require testing that's already being done in a much, much more stringent fashion when there's no need to, because there's been no proven links between cosmetics and adverse effects.
It almost sounds to some extent like the bill is saying, okay, well, let's just force all of this testing, even of, as you described it, the, you know, trace detectable amounts of things that you cannot eliminate from life in general. And maybe if there's a problem, we can go back and fix it later.
Right.
The reason I'm thinking of that is because, of course, we all know a year and a half ago, when the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act of 2008 became law in early 2009, and it put thousands of small toy manufacturers out of business because they had to do this kind of safety and scientific testing that you're describing for stuff that is not a problem in their products.
Correct. Yes, that is definitely the case. And for small manufacturers, we are already interested in removing as much toxics from our environment anyway. So we're using all natural products in the products that we're making. And it turns out that the all-natural products, like, for example, I wouldn't be able to use rose essential oil or basil essential oil because they contain a component, one teensy, teensy, teensy detectable trace element of methyl eugenol. That's a known carcinogen. And I wouldn't be able to use those in my products, even though they've been used for thousands of years, basil essential oil and rose essential oil.
And Kayla, this is a really important point, right, because I hear consumers and people who are saying they're in favor of this law, I hear them saying they want a bunch of natural ingredients in their cosmetics.
Right, but natural ingredients really, in the end, would be who's most targeted by this bill.
That's right.
The natural ingredients, the things that basically we've been using them for centuries. We've been eating them and putting them on the skin for centuries, but nobody's necessarily done all the safety testing that, say, a chemical that's put on the market is, because that is something that can be patented and owned by a company, and they're going to put a ton of money into all the safety testing. But we don't have that on all these natural ingredients that are grown all over the world, but contain a ton of things that in traced amounts are completely safe. But, you know, when you have it in an excessive amount, then they are carcinogenics, known carcinogenics. They're going to be on the list. So mostly natural ingredients are going to be affected by this more than any other ingredient on the cosmetic market.
Well, thank you for pointing that out. I thought that was important to mention, and I like the way Cindy Jones at SageScript once said, you know, water is toxic when it's in your lungs. It's just sort of a basic statement that I thought demonstrated. A light bulb went off in a couple people's heads when I said that to them. They're like, well, yeah, you know, obviously,
right.
That's the case.
And you can drink too much water and have water poisoning.
Right, even if you're just drinking it,
which excess
you're supposed to do, exactly.
Right, so things in excess can be dangerous, but things, you know, I mean, we're not, in cosmetics, you can't even put enough in to be in excess of these natural ingredients.
Who's behind this legislation, and what do they do? Where do they say they're getting science from? I mean, several representatives in our Congress have signed on to co-sponsor this legislation. What is appealing? I know you can't speak for them, but who's behind this? How is this getting all this kind of attention? I know a famous actress was on the Hill last week talking about this legislation. Of course, she has a cosmetics line. That's interesting as well. So where does this all come from, Kayla? Who are the people behind this, and what do they do?
Well, the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics came out several years ago and started petitioning people to sign their Compact for Safe Cosmetics. And basically, they came up to us at Natural Expo, and places like that were small businesses who cared about natural and organic were, and said, you know, don't you want to put cosmetics out that are natural and organic and safe and all this? And we're like, of course. I mean, I signed on originally because, of course, the safe cosmetics, that's my goal. That's what I'm in business for. And it's appealing, the whole concept of safe cosmetics. It's an appealing thing. And if you don't understand the full science behind where they're getting their information and misusing it, then it does sound very appealing. If science isn't your thing and these people come up to you and talk to you about how tell you that cosmetics are not safe and that they're going to fix that, then of course you're going to sign on and sponsor this. But the facts are that there is no science backing this, and it's misused information. It's just like the water thing. You know, if you drink water, it's fine and safe. If you drink too much, you can have water poisoning. If you have it in your lungs, you have water, you know, you drowned. But that part is being left out of the conversation. It's, you know, basically they're coming and saying, this component, like lead, it is a carcinogenic, it's dangerous, it's all this, it's going to cause all these problems, and it's in your cosmetics. And, of course, it's in your cosmetics because it's a naturally occurring element, and it's also part of the pollution in the world as well. So a cocoa tree is going to pull up the lead into it, and chocolate and cocoa butter have lead in them. And so they would both be, well, chocolate would be okay because food isn't infected in this, but cocoa butter would now be an unsafe ingredient because lead's in it. And lead is something that actually the FDA already monitors and already has safety limits set for, especially like in color cosmetics, because color ingredients come from the earth, and there is lead and other elements in the earth, and so every single color that comes through to be manufactured has to be tested for its lead level, every single batch. So your cosmetics with color in it are safe because the level of lead has already been tested to be below the safety threshold.
So, Kayla, when you were approached to sign on, as you mentioned early in your discussion, of course, it's appealing that, you know, Safe Cosmetics is appealing to everyone, and using more natural ingredients is also appealing. But do you, is it ironic that that is the same organization that's behind legislation that might now put companies who fit that description out of business?
It is, because we were exactly the target market for signing the compact in the first place. And we are the group of companies who will actually be put out of business with this bill. Large companies are not behind this bill, but they would be able to, you know, bring in the people and make it work. But all us small companies, there's no way. We could not test for all these trace ingredients. It would be every single batch. It would be like over-the-counter drugs. Every single batch would have to be tested, not only your original formula, but the every single time you make it, because in nature, your lead level is going to be different every time, depending on where the particular botanical came from.
So that just seems ironic to me. But it's the case, I guess, and that's an interesting backdrop for where we are today. Now, Kristen, you are a former compact signer, and so is Lila Barker, and actually so is Kayla. We've got three former compact signers on our show today. When we're going to have to take a short break, we're going to come back and ask, you're not compact signers anymore. How did that happen, and why did it happen? And we're going to discuss that just a little bit, and then we're going to wrap things up today. If you have any questions, you can tweet them to your tweet chat or your tweet grid, and then also go to opposesca.com. You can leave any questions and comments there as well. And at the end of the show, we've got lots of other places where you can go. All of my guests have their own websites, their own blogs, where you can share information, share resources, share ideas, and also chat with each other about how this is going to affect your business. And in your state, very important, particularly in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Massachusetts, where the original co-sponsors of this legislation are, very important. We're going to tell you how to follow them on Twitter, how to get in touch with them so you can tell them how this legislation is going to impact your business with no benefit to consumers. This is the Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We're talking today with Kristen Fraser-Kott of the Grapeseed Company, Kayla Fioravanti of Essential Wholesale, Lila Barker of Bella Luce, and Anne-Marie Fayola of Brambleberry about the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010. I'd like to bring in Marla Bosworth from Back Porch Soap Company in Massachusetts. Marla, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna Maria. Thanks for having me today.
So, Marla, you have an interesting business. Not only do you sell cosmetics and soaps, but you also teach people how to make them and how to start small businesses making them. Tell us just briefly about your business.
Sure. Well, I started Back Porch Soap Company literally on my back porch in 1998 and began wholesaling. I had a store for about 3 years. And in 2003, people started asking me, you know, how do you make soap? And at first, I didn't want to share my secrets. But I got so many inquiries, I thought, well, you know what, I'll protect what's mine and I'll spread the goods around a little bit. And that business has really taken off, that part of my business. And I have people, students that come from actually all over the world to take classes. And last year I taught about 800 students from all over how to make anything from soaps to lotions and creams. And they come from all different kinds of backgrounds. Some of them are single moms looking to make money. Some of them are nurses wanting to create products that are really healthy. So, you know, all kinds of people for all different kinds of reasons to create their own bath and body products.
So you not only, again, you sell the ingredients, but I mean, the supplies, the products themselves, but you help people get into the business. So what are they saying to you about this?
Well, you know what? A lot of people don't know about this, or they're confused about it, or they hear that it's a Safe Cosmetics Act. So initially they're behind it because they think they should be. So, you know, once I explain to them and get them on the bandwagon with, you know, the rest of us that this sounds good. I mean, who doesn't want safe cosmetics, as we've all agreed here today? And, the market may need some cleaning up in some aspect, but really the way that this proposed legislation is written is not the way to go about it. So I think more and more people are learning about it. We're spreading the word today, which is great, and we just need to get the truth out there.
So you just mentioned something that it sounds sort of critical, that, the name of the bill itself and just the word, the phrase Safe Cosmetics is something that, as Kayla mentioned earlier, everybody can get on board with, but we all know the devil's in the details, right? Kristen, you were a compact signer. Tell us how you came to no longer be one.
I guess technically I still am, because I have not been removed from the compact signer list. I have written the campaign for Safe Cosmetics numerous times asking to be removed and still have not been removed from their list. Basically, I don't want to be associated with an organization that could put me out of business and is making false scientific claims about our ingredients and unnecessarily scaring people. I've actually had conversations with the founders of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. I've gone and attended the meetings at Expo West. I really believe in getting this information firsthand and making a decision based on that, which I have done. Yet the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics is keeping me on their list as a compact signer, even though I do not want to be.
And Lila Barker of Bella Luce, did you have a similar experience?
My experience was rather similar. I, too, was an early signer of the compact. I'm certainly a believer in Safe Cosmetics. I went so far as to fly to Boston to attend meetings with them as well. And it became clear to me over time that I felt the agenda was morphing and not necessarily in the best interest of the consumer, and certainly not in the best interest of the companies who were manufacturing natural cosmetics. So we ultimately, after a period of communication back and forth with the campaign, asked to have our name removed, and it took repeated attempts to have our name removed. So I'm have no doubt that they do have supporters in this industry, but I sometimes question how many of the supporters are aware of what's being done in their name as signatories, and how many of those supporters, too, have struggled to get their name off the list, because I've heard that as a repeated complaint from literally dozens of companies.
Very, very interesting. I'm looking at the Twitter stream. There are several tweets coming out now that seem to be indicating, I don't have any confirmation of this, that are indicating a hope that the spokesperson for the Safe Cosmetics, the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, where this bill is concerned, will be interested in hearing from both sides of the issue here. Last week, as you may know, the world-famous actress Fran Drescher, also known as the Nanny, appeared on Capitol Hill and actually met with the co-sponsors of this legislation and also Representative Steve Israel of New York, who, as I understand it, is not currently a co-sponsor but was at meetings. And she has been, tweeting a little bit about this issue, and we certainly can all agree, would we not, that we would love to be able to share with her some of the other issues that are involved in this legislation. Lila?
I would hope that that Fran Drescher would be interested in hearing the other side of the story. I think the bill, on its surface, certainly makes good. It seems to make good sense, but I think once you scratch at least the surface, there are a lot of complex issues there. And Fran Drescher certainly has been a cancer advocate, but she's also kind of in the mix as well because she has her own cosmetics line, which will be impacted by this legislation. So I hope that she is paying attention. We'd certainly love to reach out to her members of, from this industry and begin a conversation about what the bill really means, both for consumers and for cosmetic companies as well.
And, you know, what occurs to me is, too, as sort of a side note, interesting or not, I'm not sure, nearly every person that I'm seeing in our tweet room here, and there are multiple dozens, maybe even hundreds, these companies are all seem to be women-owned.
Yeah. This would adversely affect women-owned businesses all over America.
And considering that women are the largest consumers of beauty products as well in this country, I feel like women are kind of, it's a double whammy. We're on the losing end of both ends of the spectrum. We're both losing our businesses, and my business specifically employs women and many single mothers because that's how I started, and that's one way that I give back to that community. So it's both, you know, costing us our businesses, and in the end, it's really not giving us any safety or assurance on the beauty aisle, which is what it claims to do in the first place.
Well, and that seems to me to be an interesting issue as well. Right now, I mean, the reason that small-scale cosmetics manufacture has grown so significantly over the past couple of years is because consumers want these products, right, Kayla? And Anne-Marie?
This is Anne-Marie. Yes, consumers do want more natural and they want more organic products. As the entire nation starts to look at the ramifications of our health issues in general, not eating enough fruits and vegetables, not working out enough, not drinking enough water, cutting down on soda, that kind of thing, it's natural that we would also be looking at our own cabinets in our kitchens and then also in our bathrooms and saying, you know what? Gosh, wouldn't I love to support a small woman-owned business, and wouldn't I love to know exactly how my products are made, and wouldn't I love to use a bar of soap that only has 4 ingredients in it? Wouldn't I love to use a lip balm that only has beeswax and olive oil and sweet almond oil in it? Wow, wouldn't that feel good? But under this potential draft legislation, small women-owned businesses all over, they're just making like $5,000 a year, enough to send their kid to soccer camp, just enough to support a little bit of extra lifestyle perks for their children and families that are selling at farmers markets. This law would make it, well, pretty much untenable for them to be able to stay in business with the labeling requirements and the legal testing requirements that we required.
Very interesting. Marla, you work with a lot of people who are interested in starting businesses. I think we all do. Anne-Marie, you teach classes at your Ocean.
I do.
In Bellingham. What are you hearing?
Marla, do you want to answer this?
Oh, yeah, as far as what people are saying about the act?
Yes, and I realized I had asked Marla, and she answered that already.
Yeah.
And Anne-Marie, are you hearing things from, any grumblings at all from small companies that are buying things?
What I'm hearing, Donna Maria, is fear. All my customers want is the opportunity to become the next Mary Kay or the next Estee Lauder. They want to be able to start a multi-million dollar business from their kitchen. They want to be the next Burt's Bees, and they're worried that they won't even get the chance if they're tied up in the red tape that this legislation will require, as written.
Well, you know, it's interesting, this time in our nation's history, where it is so difficult to adapt to the way the job market is now. People are losing their jobs. And I have spoken personally with multiple dozens of people who have started businesses. We're talking about cosmetics, but certainly in other arenas as well. We talked about the Consumer Safety Improvement Act of last year, where the toy manufacturers were affected. We have a situation where, are we legislating mom and pop out of America's opportunities to build private wealth? Can anyone comment on that? What do you think?
This is Anne-Marie again. And, you know, this country was founded on entrepreneurs being able to bootstrap their way out of any amount of poverty, lack of education, lack of family wealth. And this potentially will shut that down. Now, if it was rewritten to include an exemption for small businesses, so that they could be using the olive oil that they get in their kitchen and the beeswax that they get from the local farmer down the street, well, that would be another story. But right now, the law, as it, the draft legislation as it is written, would definitely take the American dream away for thousands and thousands of small-scale beauty manufacturers all over America.
So what you're saying, too, Anne-Marie, is that this isn't the end of it. What we're seeing right now may not necessarily be how this bill looks. Or is there a chance that it could be changed before it's passed?
Oh, definitely. There is, of course, a chance that it can be changed. And I truly believe that education is the way to go. We simply need to educate our legislatures as to how this is going to affect us. So you write your legislator, you work to educate other people, you tell your customers at farmers markets, well, gosh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be here next year because of this potential well-meaning but overly broad legislation. There's definitely a chance it can be changed.
So we can obviously work to do that. Now, what we have set up is a petition for you to sign. I'm going to share this link, and everybody can go grab it and share it as well. We're creating some buttons that you can put on your websites and on your blogs to share as well. Go to opposesca.com and just click on the link for sign the petition, and you can be taken there and you can sign the petition right now. There's also a link for you to be able to find your representative in your particular state, in your district, and write them and tell them what you think of this potential legislation. It's very important that we obviously take action. As Anne-Marie just said, we have an opportunity to impact this as we move forward. Leela, I'd like to ask you, you know, you've been with us on Capitol Hill before. We've had some wonderful meetings with legislative staffers there, and they've been very open to us, have they not?
We have. We've been very fortunate to meet both with several congressional leaders, many aides, and the FDA as well. And the environment has always been very conducive to conversation, and I really hope that they'll give us an opportunity again, because I do think very often we are on the side of caution. We sometimes don't understand all the issues. And I think once this community is able to really explain the position that we're just looking to protect consumers and protect small businesses as well, and we don't think that those two things are mutually exclusive. I truly believe that the legislation can be amended to both protect consumers and small businesses, and that's really our aim. So I think the rumors and rumbles that I'm hearing are that we'll be there shortly, and I hope that they will welcome us back. We've certainly seen positive impacts on draft legislation in 2008 and 2009 that I believe were a direct result of our visits to Capitol Hill previously. So I hope we're able to do that good again, and I hope the industry will support us in those efforts.
Right, and I think that we will definitely be able to talk, and we, of course, have been in touch with some efforts to actually do that in quite short order, because, as we know, this bill was introduced, interestingly, right before all of our representatives are going to be going out for a summer recess. But I think that we may have actually been able to squeeze in some time with them before they do that, so stay tuned for that. Again, opposesca.com, click on Write Your Representative and sign the petition. You can do that right now. I want to thank my guests and each one of you. I'd like for you to share with everyone where they can meet with you, follow you, et cetera. I'll start with Leela Barker at Bella Luce.
You can find me on the web at Bella, BellaLucce.com. There's also a link there to my blog. And I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/BellaLuce.
Kayla?
I am at EssentialWholesale.com, ESSENTIAL, Wholesale, WHOLESALE.com. And there's a link there to my blog, EssentialU.typepad.com. I'm on Twitter at EssentialU, just the letter U, and also on Facebook as Kayla Fioravanti and Essential Wholesale.
Kristen at the Grape Seed Company.
You can find me on the web at grapeseedco.com, GRAPESEEDCO.com. Same thing on Twitter, grapeseedco, and same thing Facebook, /grapeseedco.
Anne-Marie?
Hi, it's brambleberry.com, and then my blog is soapqueen.com. And I also want to point out that now in the next month, in August, is a perfect time to meet with your own representatives as they are back in their districts for their summer break. So you don't need to go to Washington, D.C. like we will. You can actually meet with your representatives right there at home. So make sure you catch them while they're in your district this August.
Excellent point. Very encouraging to mention that. Marla.
Thanks, Don Maria. It's backporchsoap.com, and at Twitter you can find me at backporchsoap, and Facebook also backporchsoap.
Follow all of these industry leaders, really, in the small-scale cosmetics. These are industry leaders in our industry. Everyone on my show today is a state advocacy leader. You can meet all of the state advocacy leaders in other states as well at indiebeauty.com. Just click on state advocacy leaders and you can meet them. And that way, if you have a question about how you can contact your representative in your state, you can take it straight to them. If you are a member of IBN or if you want to serve as a state advocacy leader in your state, because we haven't filled up all the states, you know how to contact me through Twitter at Indie Business. I'll look forward to hearing from you there. You guys, we have a few more minutes. I'd just like to wrap up by asking all of you for your final thoughts on this proposed legislation. Leela?
I just want to empower people that you make a difference. You vote, you can call, you can sign petitions, you can get the word out via Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, your blog. And the only way that we're going to be able to have a meaningful impact on this legislation is if people mobilize themselves. Get serious, go defend your companies, take a stand for customer safety and choice, and please, please, please don't anyone be passive and wait for someone else to do the work for you. We need all of the bodies. We need consumers, businesses, and industry advocates as well. So please find a way to get involved, and the opposesca.com website is a great starting point for people to understand the avenues they have available to do that.
Thank you, and my show engineer is telling me that, in fact, we don't have the few minutes I thought we had left. I know that we can all agree with everything that Leela Barker just said. Kayla Fioravanti, Leela Barker, Kristen Fraser-Cott, Marla at Backport Soap Company, and Anne-Marie Fayola at Brambleberry. Thank you so much for joining. Follow these ladies for all the latest updates and status reports. I'll have another show next week. I think we're going to stay on this topic, everyone. This is Donna Maria, Indie Business Podcast. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.